The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Elisa Carcar, bringing you honest conversations to support and inspire you as we navigate this wild parenting journey together. Today, I'm joined by Dulce, the creator of LexiLoom, a platform supporting children's communication, confidence, and connection in a unique way. We're going to chat about her journey, what led her to create LexiLoom, what she's seeing with children and families today, and some simple things we can all take away and try at home. Dulce, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for hosting me. I'm so happy to be here for this.
We're really excited to have you. And as a parent of two children in school age, I'm really curious to find out about what it is that you have created. So thank you for coming along. So let's start with you. Tell us a bit about your journey. Like, what led you to this work? Where are you from as well? I can tell you've got an accent.
Yes. So I was born in Mexico and I left my country so many years ago in 2004. I lived in Belgium for 11 years and then I moved to the UK in 2015. So it's already 11 years. So I've been away for 22 years in total. Funny accent indeed. So yeah, about my journey. So, I mean, as you can see, I migrated two times already. In the meantime, I have learned different languages. I really am passionate about communication and language because it helps us pretty much understand other people, other points of view. It helps us extend our brain. That's my thought. So yeah, I used to speak at one point of time fluently four languages. Now there are three only. So I have always liked English. That was my first language that I learned with songs. And I was so passionate about this. Now, I have a daughter. She is now 12 years old. And I was preparing her to go to these top schools. So doing the preparation for the 11 plus. Now, that was a challenge for me because at home, we deal with three languages. And one of the most difficult parts in the 11 plus preparation is English, comprehension, verbal reasoning, creative writing, all that jazz. And it was so difficult for me as a foreigner and non-native speaker, and also for my husband, to help her improve her vocabulary, especially because when we went through this, we hired the services of tutors. And we thought, okay, those are guaranteed. We can just go with that and they will help us out. But they just gave us a list of vocabulary words that my daughter needed to learn. And that actually started the challenge. Just as a background information, I work in financial services. I do analysis systems for a living. And what I saw was a break between what the traditional methods are and actually what can be improved. I didn't have enough time to actually allocate to my work. I didn't have time to allocate to my daughter. And we were just wasting so many hours, spent hours and days without having pretty much any fun. So yeah, I think that was pretty much it. I was burning out just by helping my daughter to understand vocabulary and try to not burn out my daughter in the process. So yeah, that's my journey.
Amazing. So that's kind of really been your inspiration and what led you to create a solution for this problem that you'd experienced yourself. So tell us about what it is that you've created and how it helps families, overcome the difficulties that you yourself experienced.
Yeah, so I can tell you how I found that solution. So I really like details and I like analysis. I think in order to come with a really good solution, you have to be observant. You have to understand what the real problem is. And then you can come up with solutions. That is what I do. And I love doing that kind of stuff. So when I saw that in my daughter, that she was struggling to memorize vocabulary, the only thing that I could do was to Google it. I tried to help, but some of these words in the vocabulary, in the vocabulary list or even in the resources were not there. and I didn't know them myself. So I had to pretty much get that as well, learn them, and then use them at home so that she could improve her vocabulary. And that seems all right. But I mean, having sometimes work days, 12 hours working, and then coming back home and doing this on the weekends, and it was just overwhelming. So I thought, okay, if we need to memorize this, memory, I mean, I understood that there were some studies where you can memorize up to 6 different things. And the list that we received, they were pretty much random. And we tried different things. So because what actually happened during COVID was also my daughter was missing experiences and she was missing vocabulary. The eye-opener for me was when she didn't know the word toboggan. So we went to toboggan many years back, but then she didn't remember what the word was. And we found that word in a verbal reasoning test. And to me, that was, okay, we need to do something about it. We need to create life experiences. We need to do something differently. So we stopped doing that pretty much altogether, looking into actually the data research, looking into linguistically what works, what doesn't work. So I was pretty much going through the research, and then I found things which are quite interesting. There is a study done by a German gentleman back in the 1800s. So his name is Eppenhaus, I think. And what he said is that he wanted to understand also memory, how it works. How do we actually understand memory better? So what happened is that he tried to get just the number of facts of things that actually could be understood without any, they were random. There was nothing that actually glued them together. And he tried to memorize them and he tried to understand. And then he came up with this, that it is pretty much so difficult to understand random facts. And I think that everybody knows that, right? I mean, but then this study remained there. And then back in 2016, there was another study that actually corroborated this. And I think that everybody lives that. I mean, if you are given a fact and it's just like, it doesn't link to anything else, then you're going to forget, right? So you have to really embed it within your system. I mean, in the way that I can explain it in better, it's like you have food, you see it, and you eat it, you chew it, and you swallow it, then it becomes part of you. That is the way that a word should be learned. And then thinking about food, because I love food, and thinking about vocabulary, well, you have to like that subject, right? So you have to, there must be something that, even if it's random, you have to link it to something. So if you compare the food and the word, then you have to think, okay, what type of food are you eating? Is it Mexican? Is it Chinese? Is it British? So, okay, so you say, okay, this belongs to something, right? And then it's the same thing with words. What type of words are you learning? You can actually do whatever the groupings that you want. I mean, you can talk about adjectives, you can talk about verbs, you can talk about nouns or different things. The way that the structure comes into the book, it goes into more of a personal, how you can use it in your daily life, because vocabulary learning doesn't stop with 11 plus, right? I mean, it continues. So for example, one of the sections that is the first one in the book, it's called Feelings and Emotions. So this is understanding feelings, how people actually react, how people actually can get an ambitious word embedded in themselves by looking into the emotions, and they can understand their own emotions and somebody else's as well. That opens the perspective and the scope. So that is one of the things, is linking semantics, linking, okay, this word is an adjective. It belongs to this group of feelings. You can have, of course, I mean, one word with different context, and then it has a different meaning from there. So that is a part of the mechanism. But then I thought, let's go further because I'm so ambitious. And then I thought there were some days where theory seemed all right. But some days my daughter didn't really feel like having a theory. So then I thought, what can we do that actually helps? And we started moving with the words, with the sounds, just like, okay, so what does it feel like, right? I mean, just use your brain, use your feelings. My daughter wants to be an actress. So why not? Let's act on the definition of that word. And she started doing that. We started experimenting with different things. And then I was just validating at this each stage whether there was anything that was done in the research that would prove that. And crazy enough, there are so many authors that actually do that. And I have the studies. I mean, I can put them as a references. So people can actually take those and learn from there. So those are the, I think, interesting facts. And in the end, I come up with a list of 18 different ways to learn vocabulary, which contain the traditional ones. So you have the definition, the parts of speech, etc. But then you have a different module or a different way to learn it. So it depends on your child. If your child is more energetic or they're like more kinesthetic, then they can move while saying the word. But of course, I mean, having really that understanding. Now, the other thing that I have noticed with my daughter was we as a society, we are used to just sit down and absorb everything that we receive, right? I mean, from the TV or now the radio or anything. And children are used to go to school and sit down, listen and learn. And I'm just kind of laughing within myself. I mean, because they need to pay a lot of attention at school and they are not asked, what do you think about this? Or, I mean, it depends on the teacher, but most teachers do not have the time with so many children, right? I mean, it's unfair to ask that from the teachers. So I started actually doing that. I started asking questions to my daughter. So you have that word. What does that word mean to you? So she needed to give that word into her own context. And by doing that, she started thinking more. And she started actually using the words somewhere else. And the first one that we remembered, it's the one that we always give as an example, is the word abhor. I didn't know, I mean, I knew that it's aborrecer in Spanish, but I didn't know the word in English. And it was so interesting that the way that that is explained, the way that connections and questions actually help the children to think more deeply about what they're learning, because they are absorbing and interacting with the subject. And it changes the way that children learn in general. So now my daughter is in year one. So she succeeded the exams that we fought so strongly to get her in. And now she has a really good vocabulary. And she's very eloquent. She comes with really good reasoning. And I think it also has helped her to love learning because she's becoming more curious. So this is like, okay, she came back the other day talking about physics and biology and all those terms, to be honest, that I've forgotten since I was in secondary school. And it's really good because she's interacting with the knowledge that she's having right now because she started to build that mechanism in her head about how to learn. And to be honest, having that ability to ask questions, that curiosity helps also to enhance or to start leveraging with critical thinking. And I think right now that's something that everybody can benefit from.
So almost from the work that you did with her to prepare for the 11 plus and kind of coming up with these different strategies has increased her capacity to develop vocabulary in any way, whether it's maths or English. It's an increased capacity to take on additional vocabulary, I suppose. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, if we think about it, communication is super important, right? Because we can never predict what the other person is going to be understanding. And we disregard vocabulary because we have it as a given. We learn the words from experiences, but we do not really look for the definitions in the dictionary because we don't have time, really. I mean, it's just why bother, right? And somebody can explain that word to you. But if they learn it halfway and they explain you the whole dimension, then you learn just a small part of it and your scope in a way reduces. I believe that once you put a name to something that you feel, that you experience from your senses, then your experience becomes more rich, because then you can link your senses to something that you understand in your head, and that this is the meaning of it. You can contextualize it, and then you can think, okay, so what goes next? So this resource is a digital resource that has different dimensions, but also asks questions about how can you use it, right? I mean, it's like, because one of the things that we were discussing earlier with my partner was, which words do we need to get into the book? That is the hardest thing that anybody can do, right? Because there is no specialist. Okay, this is 11 plus vocabulary. Everybody should be having those. You have different levels of children who learn or who have a specific type of vocabulary. Now, the more advanced vocabulary, like even the vocabulary that you can use in the GCSEs, shouldn't be exclusive for older children, right? I mean, once you put them into the right context, then you can have younger children even learning ambitious vocabulary. And I know it would be so funny to see maybe an 8-year-old talking like a 14-year-old, right? But why not? It also boosts their confidence in a way, because they can say, oh, I know this difficult word. And that's something that I noticed in my child. She was really shy when we started, and she acquired a level of confidence just by saying, I know more words than my peers, or I can understand what is on TV, because we don't watch TV that often, but we would like to see challenging content.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense to me. I mean, I think young children have a unlimited capacity to learn. So why not give them all the rich vocabulary, because they're absolutely capable of taking it on. And so through your own experience, you've created a resource for parents. So is it a book? Can you kind of describe in a nutshell what it is that you've created for parents, children? Is it targeted at the parents or the children?
Yeah, so we wanted to tackle the problem with a specific list of vocabulary. We thought anybody can do this at home. Any parent can do it, right? However, I mean, parents work. The parents will not have the mental capacity to do this. There is limited time. And then we thought, let's just package everything together. We thought, let's make a resource that is digital. So it's, I don't know if you are familiar with flipping books. So it's a flipping book. It's not a PDF. It's a flipping book that also has audio on how the word is spoken. It has the stories as well. So with the animations, we want to bring child actors to help us doing those animations with a small stories that explain the word in a way that hopefully the children will never forget. So those are actually other level of the context, that's something that they can grasp and understand. There is a lot of information in the books. However, it is not like you have one and then it's a one-off. No, we want to relate those, and then it's a good reference to go back to. So that's a flipping book. It goes like this. We are also providing exercises that go really deep into the level, like to really test not recognition, but really how well the understanding is. That is also provided, and we are about to launch another type of resource to help parents create a growth mindset with their children when they are helping them prepare. Because one of the things that I saw with my daughter is that we were so stressed about having her in one of those top schools that we saw, I mean, she has to deal with maths, she has to deal with arithmetics, and then she had to deal with other things that are quite complex. And then the motivation from not understanding, well, not memorizing vocabulary, that was just too much. So, and also writing and using it, it was just too much for her. So I really like reading. And one of the things that caught my attention was this growth mindset, greed theory, and all this kind of stuff. So it's just the small pieces here and there, just to remind the parents to be empathetic with their children. It is, I think, one of the most difficult things, because you have a goal And then you just know if it's met or not. And there's so much stress. And it's really difficult to go back and see and empathize with your own child.
Mm. And what sort of age is it, the resource you've created? Is it Lexi Loom? Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Yeah, it's
Lexi Loom. What age is it targeted at? Like, how old are the children that are working with it at the moment tend to be?
So the age is for 8 years old up to 14.
Okay.
But even as an adult, you can take a read and then you can look at it. And because the way that it's explained is really basic, anybody can learn it. And especially, I mean, again, I improved my vocabulary from it, from all these words that my daughter needed to learn. I think it also helps parents as well, non-native speakers, to improve our vocabulary. And actually, I'm using those words at work.
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful. And would a parent sign up for this or purchase this resource when they had a particular goal in mind? Or is it something that you would, you know, have parents use ongoing for a long period of time? How do the parents and children tend to engage with it? Is it a daily thing or a short-term goal thing?
That is a really good question. So vocabulary, I mean, exercise is just like a building a muscle, right? And you can allocate as much time as you want. What we have tested with my daughter and with other children is that 10 minutes a day is just enough. I mean, just enough because if you go through the list for one word, yeah, it's explained in such a way that it makes you think and relate to that specific word, and it has challenges and all that, and 10 minutes is good enough. Now, the stories, they last 1 minute and a half, so they're really short stories, and then you can listen to the stories on the way to when you're commuting or after dinner, and you can have conversations also with your child. And I believe that this critical age from age to 14, well, even younger, is really good to have something to talk about together. I mean, the parent and the child, because then you can actually improve the communication before they become teenagers and they stop listening to you, right? So that was another win for me that actually I experienced myself. And then I thought, well, my daughter is unique, right? But then I received feedback from other parents that it was really good for bonding. And it just requires a couple of questions, and the questions are non-invasive. They are just like very, how can I say it? We didn't want to deviate the child from a very agnostic perspective. So we just want to say, okay, this is the word. We don't want you to think about this in this word, but to just to expand your view and you decide how to see it. We don't want to implement morals. We just want to say, this is it. And the parent can decide also which values they want also to ignite in their children.
Yeah, makes sense. And with the parents that you have been giving you feedback about using this resource with their children, what's the feedback been? And have you seen any kind of like big shifts and kind of success stories?
Yeah, to be honest, it is quite frightening to put a product just like that outside, and based on the experience that I had with my daughter, and not everybody thinks the same way that I do. And bringing just along, we have actually had really good feedback, and there were parents that said that their children, they wanted to learn one word every day. So to me, that was like, wow, that is just, thank you. And there were other cases where they said, yeah, well, my daughter likes this acting way of saying the words and feeling about them. There were other parents that they liked the stories. We want to improve the stories because at this point, we wanted just to get it out as soon as possible because we know that the exams are coming in September. I mean, some people might need it, but we want to improve it and have real voices of actors, child actors to get in there. So that is what we have received. Also, the bonding comment, that was something that is spectacular.
That's nice, yeah. I think one word a day, 10 minutes a day feels achievable, right? It's bite size. It's not overwhelming. It's something you can kind of chip away at rather than it being this huge, overwhelming task and this big looming exam. Little and often is often the best way, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I mean, it might look overwhelming to some parents. And there was one person who actually came back, and it had to do with, I just started this startup. And that was one of my experiences. I just kind of saw that somebody bought it, and then they thought, yeah, this is not what I expected. So the expectation, I think, at this point from this type of or any type of vocabulary is gamification of the tool. And there are some people who like it. There are some people who are against it. And to be honest, I cannot say anything about it, what is right or what is wrong, but what is good for you. For that specific person, she expected more of a game type of tool, which is fair enough. That happens. I think having the opportunity to see a resource where you can select the way that you like to learn, that is all fine. If you have a difficult word and then you want to learn more of them, you can find them as well in semantics.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, really interesting. So if parents are listening and they want to find out more about LexiLoom, how can they do that?
Oh, yes. So they can go to our website, www.lexilume.co, and LexiLoom.co, and they will have all the references. I am hosting as well masterclass this week, on the 29th, on Sunday evening, and on the 2nd of April, to discuss about what cognitive vocabulary is about, talk about what we're doing right now, the three main mistakes that people are doing right now with the current methods of learning vocabulary, and discussing with them what is cognitive vocabulary, and yeah, just show them that there is an alternative out there that will help the children, and they can decide.
That's really interesting. Well, if people don't make it on live, will the recording be available as well?
They can book a meeting, a one-to-one with us, and then we can have a chat. I'm interested also to get to know what they think.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. And then just before we finish, what would you say is one simple thing parents can start doing at home today who are feeling inspired to, you know, help their child with their vocabulary that is going to make a difference? What could they start today?
That's a really good question. I think that today what a parent can do is to stop themselves from telling the definition of a word if their child sees or asks for it, or when they see like a word that they might not know, just refrain from telling the definition. Ask them what they think about the meaning of that word. Try to have those questions asked to them so they can become curious. And once they're curious, they might say, oh yeah, I'm going to look it up in the dictionary, which is totally fine. And then just go with questions to them. But I will say, instead of actually you doing all the work, just throw the ball at them and have them figure it out.
Yeah, wonderful. Great advice. They learn more through their own experiences than being just told, right? Dilsey, thank you so much for joining us today, for the work you're doing to support children and families in such a thoughtful and meaningful way. I'm excited to see how things progress, and I'm definitely keen to learn more. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you for the invite.
Lovely to speak to you. You've been listening to The Parent Show on Mix 92.6. Today I was joined by Dulce, the creator of LexiLoom, talking about supporting children's communication, confidence and connection, and sharing simple ways parents can make a difference at home. You can find out more about LexiLoom and how to connect with Dulce through her website and social media. I'm Elisa Carcar, and I'll be back next time with more honest conversations to support and inspire you on your parenting journey. Until next time, take care.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So welcome back to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. It's great to have you with us again. I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Jess Smith from Raiden Solicitors here in St. Albans. And of course, Raiden Solicitors are the sponsors of The Parents Show. So Jess, before we go into talking about no-fault divorce, which is our topic for today, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, please?
Hello. So I'm Jess. I am a family law solicitor at Raiden Solicitors. So I deal with relationship breakdown, and that involves divorce, dealing with child arrangements, and also finances. Generally, that's the bulk of my work. I've been at Raiden's for 6 years now. So one of the long ones. That's me.
Fantastic. Thanks a million, Jess. Now, today, the plan is to talk about no-fault divorce. Can you tell us, for our listeners who don't know, what is no-fault divorce?
I can indeed. So there was a big reform to the divorce law, which was implemented. It was the 6th of April 2022. So it's actually not that new. It's now nearly 4 years old, although it feels new still, and everyone still calls it the new change. But essentially what happened is people who want to divorce now don't need to give a reason for that divorce. So they can apply to the court to end their marriage without having to give a reason why their marriage has broken down. So that's the big change.
Thanks a million. So what was wrong with the old divorce system, Jess? Why did it need changing?
So the big problem was that people had to attribute blame for a divorce. So essentially, there was a lot of people where there was a mutual decision to get divorced, but then in a divorce application, they were having to come up with a reason. So sometimes just make up or create a reason, which doesn't start things off on a very good track. So a lot of the time, people are going to be dealing with arrangements for their children and dividing their finances. And actually, to be putting blame on someone at the beginning of that process, it doesn't start the tone very well. And it just creates an unnecessary conflict between people. And actually, the big thing that probably I should say behind it all is that the court aren't generally interested about why people are divorcing. That they're sort of trying to look forward in and help people go their separate ways. So actually, the reasons for a divorce in most cases aren't that relevant. And so for people to have to write down on an application what's gone wrong doesn't really have any bearing on anything going forward. And so actually, the whole concept was changed just so that people could start off a process without having to blame somebody and without having to come up with a reason why their marriage had broken down. That's essentially what happened.
It makes complete sense, because it obviously does. If the first thing you're going to do is start blaming each other, it's not going to go constructively or
exactly.
Positively. Brilliant. So that the blame element is gone now. So can you tell us, how does a no-fault divorce process work today?
Yes. Yeah, so essentially it's all done online, the actual divorce process, and couples can either apply on their own or they can apply jointly if they want to. If they want to be collaborative, they can do it together. And essentially one of them goes on, makes the application, the other one responds to that application. And in that response, if, for example, we're in a situation where one person wants the divorce and another doesn't, the person that doesn't actually have the opportunity to contest the divorce as such. There's only very, very limited grounds that they can do that. For example, if there's a lack of jurisdiction in this country. And so actually the divorce can proceed whether the respondent, as they're called, likes it or not. So it actually makes the whole process much more streamlined and easy. But that, yeah, it's essentially an application, a response, and then two orders that are made, and then the divorce is done.
And that's great that there's no blockage in the sense that one person can't stop the divorce going ahead.
Exactly.
If they want to, because I know in divorce in other parts of the world, that is possible. And it means that you're in limbo for the rest of your life if you can't fix it.
Yeah, and it means that one person can be is being forced to stay in a relationship that they don't want to be in. And that's obviously against human rights and all sorts. So yeah, it's good that now the process can just sort of proceed regardless. If one person, if that's their choice, then that's their choice.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Jess. So that means, I mean, I'm kind of doubling back now. So one person can initiate the process completely on their own.
They can, yeah.
Great. And is there a cooling off period or a waiting period before the kind of wheels start turning in the process?
Yeah, so that's one thing that hasn't really changed in terms of the divorce process. So one party or jointly, people will make the application, and then the court has imposed a 20-week waiting period after the application has been processed. And the aim of that cooling off period is for people to reflect, make sure it's what they want. And also it gives an opportunity for them to deal with those other aspects of child arrangements, finances, because they take often a little bit longer to deal with. And then after that 20 weeks, they're able to apply for the first order within the divorce process.
It kind of makes sense that there's time to reflect, because we are talking about emotions and people can get very whipped up about these things, obviously, understandably. But to have a time to just reflect is probably good. And that's a good amount of time. It's not 20 weeks. Mm. I mean, it's a long enough period, but it's not too long.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's a big decision to go through a divorce. And so you want to make sure you're doing the right thing. And like you said, emotions are involved and people will sometimes do things based on emotion. And actually, they then have reconciliation conversations and realise it's not what they want. And it's quite easy to withdraw the application at that stage rather than when it gets to the next stage when the court's making orders. So that's why the cooling off period is there. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, brilliant. And so now, roughly, how long does the whole process take?
So from application to getting the final divorce order, which is the order that formally ends your marriage, it's a minimum of 26 weeks, so about 6 months. The reality is that it's probably going to be a longer period of time than that, because the court has a processing time between each stage. And also, this is just the divorce process itself. It's not dealing with any of the associated financial elements. And we generally tell clients not to apply for that final order until they have all their finances resolved. So sometimes it will take longer because finances can be quite complicated. So actually, in reality, it's longer than 26 weeks. But if everything is smooth sailing and people come to agreements quite quickly, then it's a 26 weeks minimum.
26 week minimum. Okay, that's brilliant. Thank you. So the next question is, has this changed how people are reacting to divorce? Has it de-escalated tensions? Has it made things smoother? Is it making life better for those involved?
So within the divorce process itself, I would say yes, because there is nowhere for there to be a dispute anymore. You're literally ticking a box on an application which says our marriage has broken down irretrievably and that's the end of that. So in terms of the divorce process, I'd say yes, it's made a big difference and people aren't having arguments about what should be included in a divorce application. But what I would say is, as a family law solicitor, people generally only come to me when they are having issues, where they are having problems communicating with their spouse, where they are unable to reach agreements with their spouse about the other aspects, so the finances, child arrangements. And so those tensions do still exist, even if they're not put on a divorce application. And what I would say, some people are keen to attribute that blame, whether it's in the application or elsewhere. So I often have to talk to clients about where the relevant place is to bring up anything that's happened during the marriage, because sometimes it is relevant in dealing with the finances or children matters, but other times it's not. And if the court's not going to be interested, then essentially people are wasting their time in raising these things in a legal arena, and they're wasting their money on legal fees in doing so. So what I would say is that the divorce application itself, definitely better, less tensions, less conflict. But if people are hell-bent on wanting to attribute that blame, which again, there's lots of emotions, people are upset, they will find somewhere else to sort of push that blame out within the divorce process overall, if that makes sense.
Completely. Thanks, Jess. So, because obviously, just because the process has changed and the kind of starting pistol isn't blame, it doesn't mean you're going to remove all the barriers and all the kind of areas of tension. So what you're saying makes complete sense. Now, getting more into the nitty gritty, does the no-fault divorce change how assets are actually divided?
No. So the divorce law is literally in relation to the divorce process itself. It doesn't have any bearing on the finances at all or children matters. So they are still dealt with it very separately by the courts, by us. And like I say, that's generally where conflicts will arise, is in those areas, because they're the areas that matter to people. But the divorce process itself is the only part of that law that's changed.
Okie doke. So no effect on assets, child arrangements or maintenance. They stay the same.
No.
Great. Lovely and clear. Thank you. What would you say is the biggest myth people have about a no-fault divorce?
Funnily enough, I think it's that they still have the option to blame.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have people sometimes ask if they can still respond to an application and say what's happened during the marriage and attribute that blame. And we have the process is very much out of our hands. It is simply one person applies, the marriage is broken down, and that's the end of that. So it always shocks me that obviously it's called no fault divorce. That's not the legal name, but that's what it's known as. But people still want to do that, and they still think they can dispute a divorce. That always surprises me too. But I mean, it's a quick conversation and explaining that it's not possible anymore.
And it's conversations like this that'll raise awareness around it. But I think probably television has a role to play in this. We probably have just seen so many dramas where, you know, it's like the starting pistol is fault, blame.
Well, because that's where all the drama is, isn't it? That makes for good telly and radio and whatever. But yeah.
They'll have to catch up now as well. Right. So at what point is it best to get legal advice, Jess? What's your recommendation?
I mean, I would say once you've sort of made that decision that you want to end your marriage, I think it's good to have even that initial advice before maybe you've even spoken to your spouse, just to understand your legal position, because a lot of people, when they come to see us, they're quite misled about what the position is going to be in terms of what's going to happen to their children, how often they're going to see their children, but also in relation to their finances. The divorce process itself, it isn't very shocking. There's not really much happening there. But in terms of the finances and children, just to understand what the divorce actually means for you going forward and how it's going to change your life in every aspect. So I would say as soon as you can. But again, in some situations, it's not required. If you're on amicable terms and you can have good discussions between you, then that's great. And you can do it all without lawyers if that's the case. I would say if you are struggling to communicate with your spouse, if you are having discussions but can't reach any agreements, obviously if you're affected by domestic abuse, then I think that's where legal advice is crucial, because that's where lawyers can unlock all of that for you and support you in the process. Yeah, I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. And actually, as you say, you know, early on might be good, and indeed you might just find that the legal advice you get at the start sets you up and provides you with the information, you know, to maybe go down a more amicable route, because at least you're equipped with the facts.
Exactly. And your expectations are set a bit better, and sometimes it's all that you need is that initial meeting, and actually that sets you up for all of the discussions, and you might not require any more legal advice. But just knowing what your legal position is, I think, is really important.
Why would you guess it? Do you know what I mean?
Well, exactly.
Why would you leave it to chance? Or why would you, which is probably even scarier, ask an LLM or ChatGPT to help you with something like this?
It's a bit like when you've got something wrong with your health, you don't diagnose yourself, do you? You go to a doctor.
Yeah.
So if the option is there and you are in a position where you think that you'd benefit from that understanding, I think it's great.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Jess. So it's brilliant that no fault divorce has come in, well received, well thought through. Are there other areas of family law that need a little bit of tweaking, bit of reform?
Definitely.
Okay.
I would say the big one is financial rights for cohabitees. So despite, I don't know why this myth exists, there's a whole concept of common law marriage, which people think applies to when you live with somebody, that you're protected. That is no legal concept. It doesn't exist. So essentially, where we're in an environment now where people are choosing to live together more and more, much more than they used to, maybe before they get married, but maybe they just never want to get married. I think that they are a lot of the time under illusions that they're protected financially. But the reality is that they're not in the same way that married couples are. And if they were to split, the way that, especially finances, the way that assets are and income are divided is in relation to ownership. So if you own a property together, that's going to dictate who walks away with what. There's no adjustments that can be made when you're unmarried. And this is, I think, an area where family lawyers are calling out for a reform, because there are so many cohabiting couples now and people that have been cohabiting for a very long period of time, and they're they're making financial commitments, but that they will never see back. And don't get me wrong, that there are ways that you can challenge the legal ownership to divide them, not based on what they are like legally on paper, but those processes are very, very complicated and very, very expensive and just out of reach for most people. So, yeah, I think that's the big area that a lot of people are calling for reform on, I would say.
I wasn't aware of it until I've had the opportunity to speak to you and other colleagues. And I was really surprised by it as well. I just assumed when you hit a certain number of years together, surely something kicks in to give you equal rights. And it's not.
Nothing.
And I heard one of your colleagues, actually, I had a chat with recently. They said a great phrase that stuck in my head. It's like, you don't get the benefits of the club if you're not in the club, i.e. marriage, you know. Yep. So if you're not in it, you don't get the benefits, which I think helps people understand, you know, that cohabitation doesn't give you the same rights as marriage.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. If somebody's thinking about getting a divorce, what do you think they should do first, Jess?
So I would say talk to your loved ones, talk to people that will give you sensible, rational advice. Most people have people around them that they can confide in, and just to sort of get your feelings out there. I mean, if it's not someone that you want to talk to close to you, but maybe a therapist or a counsellor or someone, I have a lot of clients that have found that very helpful. But again, I go back to legal advice, even if it's just an initial meeting, just go and understand where you stand legally and what a divorce is going to mean for you practically and the impact on your life it's going to have. I can't stress enough how much people appreciate that. Even after an hour of advice, everyone's finding out things that they didn't know. So that's what I would say, probably the first few things, talk to people and get some advice.
Because it's going to be out in the open anyway. If you are going to get a divorce, you're going to have to go public with it. So you best off test, you know, with
exactly.
People you trust and who are close to you, I guess.
Yeah.
And now we're rapidly running out of time, Jess. So I have one last question for you before we go, which is, what's the one thing you wish the public understood about divorce law today?
I think the big one, which I take for granted because it's my job, is that there are three different tracks when it comes to separating. So there's the divorce process, which we've spoken a lot about today. That's quite an easy process, all done online, one very separate thing. Then there's the finances. So when you're divorcing, you obviously have to work out how your assets and your income is going to be split. And then there's the children and working out who they're going to live with, who they're going to spend time with. Their schooling, all of the things that children need. So the big thing for me is that they are three separate things, because generally clients come to me and they think that it's all wrapped up in one and they can deal with it all together. But the reality is that the best way to look at it is three separate things. Divorce process is the easy bit. Finances is one part and children is one part. And to sort of separate them all out and think about them all individually, that's the big thing I think that people don't sort of grasp.
No,
when they're first separating.
That's really, really helpful. Mm. And to kind of conceptualise it in those three different tracks helps manage expectations too.
Exactly that.
Brilliant. Jess, it's been fantastic to speak to you. Thanks so much for joining us on The Parent Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So that was Jess Smith from Raiden Solicitors. And Raiden Solicitors are indeed sponsors of The Parent Show.
The Parent Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.